This is Joe Basso from Music Radar, the place for music makers, and I'm speaking with Mike Portnoy, the drummer from Dream Theater and about 150 other bands. how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. Obviously, with Dream Theater, you guys do not have three-minute songs. Is there a process that you use to memorize the incredible amount of music that you have to play?
I have been blessed with an elephant's memory, and the guys in my band hate me for that. I could probably sit down right now and play any of the songs from my band Rising Power when I was in high school. You know, just kind of embedded in there. In fact, it's funny because on the last tour, we did our 20th anniversary tour, and we broke out the very first song we ever wrote together back in 85, and we brought it back, you know, for the 20th anniversary. And I literally sat down behind the kit and played the song without even having to go back and listen to the tapes. It was just kind of embedded in my brain. So it makes those guys nuts, and I write different set lists for every show, and, you know, those guys are going like crazy trying to learn everything and rehearse it at soundcheck and program, and I just kind of, you know, rattle them off the tip of my head, and just they come out of my fingertips, no problem. So I don't know why that is, but it just is.
You bring up something. You do the set lists, and I know you have a thing about not doing the same show twice. Do you have a kind of process for coming up with your set lists?
Yeah, it's a big, tedious process. It's kind of like solving the ultimate crossword puzzle. Each and every show has its own unique experience, and I do a lot of research for every single show. For instance, if we're playing in Detroit, I will go back and look at all the previous set lists from the last two or three times we played in Detroit, and we'll write a set list for that particular city that doesn't repeat anything from the previous couple of visits. And also, similarly, the other side of that that makes me nuts is if there's a couple shows within driving distance, like for instance, tonight we're in Richmond, Virginia. Mm-hmm. Last night we were in Washington, D.C., you know, which is about an hour and a half drive. So knowing that there's going to be a lot of repeat people at both shows, you know, I have to make each one of these sets different from each other. So it's a big, long, tedious process with a lot of research, and this is how I spend my days off on tour while the other guys are out sightseeing.
So now when one tour ends and a year later another tour begins, is it all right there for you? You don't have to brush up on the material like the other guys then, right?
I really don't, like I was just saying, and I'm not trying to brag. It's just the way my mind is. I have this elephant's memory that just retains, you know, every song I've been a part of. And like you mentioned at the top, you know, kind of jokingly, I'm in 100 different bands, and it's funny. I retain all of it. I remember in 2003, I did a Zeppelin tribute show, which was about 2.5 hours of Zeppelin music, and then a week later I went and did Neil Morse's Testimony Tour,
right,
which was like a 3-hour show. So I was at that point retaining like 6 hours of music, you know, just off the top of my head, and it's I don't know how I do it, but for some reason it comes very natural to me.
You've joked about this, I think, on your website, but do you think you have OCD, and does it help?
Oh, I absolutely do, and I think it helps in this case, you know, in the case of trying to have everything so organized and meticulously, laid out and, you know, to pay attention to the set list and to try to do official bootlegs for the fans and, you know, just that attention to detail, which could sometimes be incredibly maddening to somebody like my wife. In this case, I think it actually really benefits the fans.
Now, you do so much in Dream Theater, you know, you write music, you write lyrics, you produce records, you oversee the website, let's see, what am I leaving out? You work
direct
on...
the DVDs.
You work on merchandise, didn't you get the memo that you're a drummer?
Well, nobody told that to Phil Collins, and nobody told that to Lars Ulrich, so I figured, why should I pay attention either?
What possible holes do you see in your playing? I mean, you remind me of Hal Blaine, you know, you can sit down and just kind of make it all happen and with authority and creativity, but what holes do you see in your playing?
Well, it's strange. I think my playing is probably my weakest link, and it's what I'm most known for. I think everything else I do for the band is my strength, And sometimes I think the drumming just happens to be, you know, my tool, you know, on stage. But really, when I'm in the studio, I'm concentrating on so many other aspects of the music. The drumming is the least of my thoughts and concerns and focus. So I would say that's probably because I do spread myself so wide, you know, to so many different areas, I probably don't get to spend as much concentration and focus on the drums than if I was to just be the drummer. You know, if I was just the drummer, then I could probably sit around and practice all day. But being that I have to oversee everything else, you know, perhaps it takes away from my growth behind the kit. But I'm not complaining. You know, I'm very humbled and flattered by all of the accolades I've had through the years, and it amazes me. It's still a big honor anytime I win a drummer award,
sure,
or
yeah,
you know, or somebody, you know, actually pays me a compliment.
You are so widely imitated and have influenced so many drummers, but you yourself are in a lot of tribute bands. The Who, Rush, The Beatles. Why do you like to be in tribute bands?
Well, a couple reasons. I mean, first and foremost, I'm always going to be a music fan. I'm a fan, first and foremost, and I love music. So, you know, within Dream Theater, we've paid tribute to so many bands. We've done full album covers by, you know, Floyd and...
Yeah.
Deep Purple and Metallica and Maiden, and a lot of one-off covers, you know, everybody ranging from Queen to Journey. So, I mean, I've spent a lot of time in Dream Theater paying tribute to bands, but then, like you mentioned, I've had these tribute bands outside of Dream Theater, and I guess that's mainly because, you know, some of my favorite bands of all time, like The Beatles and The Who, for instance, are two of my all-time favorite bands. Dream Theater doesn't really incorporate a lot of that influence.
Right.
You know, so I can't really utilize my Beatles influence and love in Dream Theater. So I felt the need to kind of go outside and do a couple of these tribute projects. And it's just because I love music. I love these bands. I love these artists. And on a selfish level, for me, I just love doing it because I'm getting to play the music I love and grew up with. But on the other level, you know, maybe it will help kind of introduce a new generation of Dream Theater fans to maybe, you know, the older, more classic rock stuff that we grew up with. And of course, you know, you can hear that stuff on the radio and everybody knows the Beatles, but, you know, these projects, I like to go a little deeper and go deeper into the Beatles catalog and
sure.
the Who catalog and the Zeppelin catalog and, you know, maybe show, you know, the younger kids, you know, the more deeper material that they don't hear on the radio.
I think a lot of fans, if they pulled it up on YouTube, would be amazed to see you play something like Nowhere Man, you know,
right.
behind a five-piece kit, and do it seamlessly. So when you're in a tribute band, how do you slip into the head of a Ringo Starr or a Keith Moon or a John Bonham?
A bit of it has to do with the drum kit. You know, in each of these cases, Tama built me these replica drum kits, you
yeah.
know. I had a classic four-piece Ringo kit. I had the classic Song Remains the Same Bonham kit. And I had this, you know, wacky double bass, three matching toms and three crash cymbals Keith Moon kit. So when you get behind these kits that are so identifiable with the personalities and styles of these drummers, you can't help but turn into them. You know, when I did the Who tribute, I just felt completely possessed by the spirit of Keith Moon. You know, I couldn't help but play like him, and you know, same goes with the other drummers. You know, when I did the Moby Dick solo with the Zeppelin tribute, there wasn't a single bit of Mike Portnoy in that drum solo. It was all John Bonham. You know, these guys are my heroes, and to be able to be them for a day or for a couple of days was a dream come true.
That's what's amazing in a way, because when you're in these bands, you are the drummer in a very identifiable band, but you are also taking on the role of a very identifiable drummer, i.e. Ringo Starr.
Yeah, what can I say? I mean, you know, these guys are my heroes, and, you know, I used to dress up like Kiss for Halloween when I was a kid, and I used to dream about doing something like that. And, you know, and of course, some of the credit goes to my partner in crime, Paul Gilbert, who joined me for all four of these
yeah,
tribute bands.
Yeah.
He's as much of a music fan as I am. You know, he and I are very much kindred spirits in that respect, where we have this vast musical background and knowledge and really feel passionate about the bands we grew up with. So he was just as much in character of Jimmy Page and Alex Lifeson and Pete Townsend and what am I missing? And, you know, and George Harrison as I was in the drum department. So it was just really was a lot of fun in all four cases.